let's put a smile on that face.
All right, guys, what's up? It's time for another episode of Extremely Geeked Out Podcast. And today, guys, I have a very special guest with me today, Instagrammer, comic books classic, Ryan Kent.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
And also, guys, he was the winner of the most recent giveaway. We did the only giveaway I've done so far on this podcast, the Captain Marvel tickets giveaway as well. And Ryan, you enjoyed it?
I did, yes, very much. I thought it was another really, really good entry into the Marvel pantheon of MCU movies.
Yes, yes, indeed. It was just a solid, good movie, and a very had powerful messages within the movie as well. Not so much of a PC type move as most people are claiming it to be.
No, I think that was really overblown online of the, you know, everyone kind of being upset that it was, like you said, kind of too PC. I thought it was just kind of a regular movie that didn't beat you over the head with any messages, but still portrayed a strong character, you know, regardless of her, you know, her gender.
Yeah, yeah. No, like I said, I think it was a much needed story for Captain Marvel, and just based off on her past history in comic books, I think it was needing a refresher and make it more presentable to younger audience or newcomers to Marvel movies.
Yeah, and you know, I never actually have gotten around to reading much Captain Marvel, you know, not the old stuff and not really even the new Kelly Sue DeConnick stuff. So I was one of the newcomers, which is kind of rare for me with these comic book movies. So it was kind of nice to come in and get a really kind of pared down, humanized version of a character that I could relate to kind of right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I want to talk about your Instagram page, Comic Book Classics. For those who are listening and don't know about it, share about what your Instagram page is all about.
I had my comic book collection in storage for a few years. I started collecting, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, and then I had it in storage for a few years, and when I pulled it out last year, I was going through it, and there were a lot of things that I was reminded of that I'd forgotten. Oh, I had this great comic or this great comic, and I wanted to share it with someone, and I don't have a ton of friends who read comics, so I just kind of started an Instagram page for it where I try to, you know, share something from my collection and kind of maybe some knowledge about it or what I think of it or why I do and don't like it. It's almost all positive stuff. I like reviewing positive things more than negative things.
Yeah.
But I try to be a little bit informative on there, just kind of give my opinion on some of the art or some of the writing on there.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to, for those who are trying to get into comic books who don't know all about the character they may be reading about, let them decide whether or not they like that certain character or that certain story about that character, versus to just telling them, oh no, it sucks, you know, or I don't like, basically giving your own biased opinion. You just basically just, this is what it's about, and it's for you to decide whether you like it or not, right?
Right, and like I don't ever want to say, you know, this art sucks or this character sucks. I like to give, you know, maybe I'm not a fan of it, but that doesn't mean other people can't be a fan of things. And I'll never say something doesn't have artistic merit. You know, there are plenty of characters out there that are really popular that I don't care for, or characters that I really like that other people don't care for, and that's all right. Comics are big enough for all of us to kind of have something we all relate to.
Yeah. Art is art to the eye of the beholder. That's what I always believed in. I mean, what I think is really good art might be completely different what you think is really good art.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, not to kind of give away what we're going to be talking about today, but the explosion of comics in the last couple of years, I think a lot of more people are getting a wider range of things that they could be interested in.
Absolutely, absolutely. Also, I wanted to ask you this, and I'm pretty sure it's the same way it was for me, but how did you get into comic books?
You know, people, you know, of our age, we're about the same age. I think a lot of us kind of came in on the from the media, you know. I didn't have anyone in my life reading comics. You know, my dad didn't read comics, or I don't have any older brothers or anything. But, you know, the early 90s, you know, coming home from school and Batman the Animated Series is on, or, you know, X-Men is on, you know, that led to Batman Beyond and Superman and Justice League Unlimited. And, you know, eventually, you know, the big one for me was the Raimi Spider-Man movie, the first one. I saw that. I'm like, okay, I want to know. I don't want to wait 2 years for another movie. I want to start reading more Spider-Man now. I want to know more about this character now. And that's kind of how I got into comics for the first time, is, you know, going to, at the time, just a Barnes & Noble and picking up Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate X-Men trades. Kind of getting in that way. So I'm kind of one of the people that the Ultimate, the goal of the Ultimate line really got me into comics.
That sounds about how my origin really started with comic books too. Yeah, just watching those old animated series like Spider-Man, X-Men, Batman, as you said before, and it's, they just kept on coming as, you know, the years went by. You know, Batman Beyond, Justice League Unlimited, and Teen Titans, and I think eventually they started doing like the DC Nation thing on a Cartoon Network,
right? Like a Saturday night. I didn't have anywhere to go. I was, you know, sitting at home watching cartoons, and usually it was superhero cartoons.
And then eventually when I saw Sam Raimi Spider-Man, that kind of was like a, just almost like a full circle, because of watching the animated series and then seeing this character that you looked up to and on live, you know, live action screen, it was like just everything for me. For then, that's when it was like, okay, I got to start reading more about this character, and and just went into like going to Barnes and Noble and picking up Ultimate Spider-Man trades. I think I read the first volume on that of that. I think I had like the first two to first three of those, but media was definitely the gateway, I think, for people our age getting into comic books, for sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah, let's get into this. Talking about comic books back then and now, and we're going to start with back then. The 90s, aka the extreme era.
Yeah, very aptly put.
Yes, just everything dialed to almost to a 20. This black leather,
big guns,
spikes,
big muscles. You know, everyone's angry. You know, all the faces are grim.
Gritty teeth and just cybernetic limbs, pouches. Shoutouts to Rob Playfield. It was just, everything was just over the top, which it, I mean, if you really think, look at it, 90s was, everything was just big, everything, big hair, big, just everything.
Yeah. And a lot of that came out of that, you know, 1991, that the launch of Image with, you know, the biggest characters in comics, you know, the biggest writers in comics. The biggest names in comics were all artists, you know, coming out of the 80s. You know, Marvel realized that a lot of the books were being sold more based on art merit than writing merit. You know, Rob Liefeld, like we said, McFarland, Lee, Mark Silvestri. Again, going into the 90s, those were the people that were selling books. So a lot of that extreme was what was driving the sales in the 90s.
Oh, totally, totally, totally. And it was just also like the most, I guess you could say, like most volatile. It's like so many, so many violent type characters, more so villains, came out the 90s, like Carnage,
right.
Deadpool, I guess you could put Cable in there as well.
A lot of the superheroes, I mean, a lot of the stories we got more violent too. I mean, the 90s, you know, you see obviously the death of Superman where he's basically just beaten to death
for yeah.
like 8 issues. And, you know, Bane breaking Batman's back, it was kind of like, okay, people have been reading comics for 40, 50 years at this point. How do we keep surprising them? And it kind of turned into, well, let's kill the characters. You know, Green Arrow died in the 90s. A lot of characters died in the 90s, and they've been brought back, but
oh, of course,
it
yeah.
just became, you know, an arms race to outrace Image by, you know, selling comics by having more and more extreme events in there. And a lot of that, it did turn to violence and kind of over the top gratuitousness.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And one thing I could think of is X-Men or X-Force, New X-Men,
X-Factor,
just X everything.
No, that was very much, especially, I think a lot of that came from the rise of that cartoon show, but the X-Men were everything in the 90s.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. They were pretty much everywhere. I think my cousin, he was a huge X-Men fan. I remember him having the trade cards or the metallic type ones that came out back then. I'm not sure if they're worth anything now, but I'm distinctively remembering him having like a set of those. And yeah, to my knowledge, it seemed like X-Men outplayed everything back then.
Mm-hmm. And that really lasted until Brian Michael Bendis took over the Avengers, did Avengers Assembled and did New Avengers, and Avengers kind of became the Marvel's headlining group in 2004. But up to that point, the X-Men had really dominated for a couple of decades. They were the highest in sales. They were the most popular. They were getting the marquee artists and writers on the books. No, the X-Men were very, very, very important to the 90s.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and a lot of, even though it was a crazy decade, but it was a lot of good came out of that too. Like there were a lot of good characters. Definitely. Yeah, a lot of good characters. A lot of good stories that kind of just played into some of our current books now. That we'll probably get into in a little bit, but a lot of good stuff did come out of the 90s, so.
Definitely. Just want a couple of my favorites. I know, you know, it's kind of cliche to say, but Marvel's and Kingdom Come, the two Alex Ross books of the 90s, have become kind of, you know, very important books to kind of have on your bookshelf.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you never saw that type of style in any books or in history of comic books. You never seen, it was the closest live action superhero movie you could have gotten to back then.
Right. And I you're right. I remember, you know, a lot of my early comic book reading was done at the library because I didn't have, you know, money. I was still in, you know, middle school and high school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading things like Young Justice or Batman, and a lot of it, you know, it's kind of, you know, I can recognize it now for the artistic merit it has, but it's very kind of standard superhero. And I remember picking up Marvels was the first one I read before Kingdom Come. I picked it up and I just was blown away because it looked like photographs, and that's
right.
The point of the book is built like photographs, you know, with Phil Sheldon being the main character, but it absolutely knocked my socks off.
Yeah, I never read it, like, I never held an actual copy of myself of The Kingdom Come, but I remember reading it digitally and just looking at it, I'm like, mm-hmm. I never seen art like this in any book to memory. And going back to, like, the Steve Ditko's, era, that, I mean, you didn't get that kind of quality at all. You're getting, like, Renaissance art.
Right. It was like painting, you know, it was like the paintings you'd see in a museum.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And those books, both of them, were kind of a response to that extreme era of the 90s, where Marvel's, his first one that he did with Kurt Busiek, was very much there, you know, not really enjoying what was going on in the 90s and kind of saying, let's go back to the simpler time, when the heroes were heroes and it was kind of bright. And then, you know, a few years later, he came back with Kingdom Come with Mark Waid. And, you know, the antagonists in that book are the heroes' kids and the new wave of heroes that are ultra-violent. It's kind of about Superman and Wonder Woman trying to restore the way things were and bring back a heroic age. So I really think those were responses to the time, and kind of we remember them because they went against the grain so much.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of about art, most of the artists that we know now came throughout the art throughout the decade as well, like Rob Fitley, Field, Jim Lee, Tom McFarlane, just to name a few. It was definitely, going back to what we're saying, it was definitely the year for artists to arise.
And with that, I mean, Image, a lot of the thing that, you know, if you were going through in the early 90s and looking at all the books on the stand, is what set Image apart. It was the focus on the art and then the printing quality too of their books. And, you know, before that, newsprint, you know, it was basically just newspaper where the comic books were made up. They're
very right.
flimsy. If you pick up a book from the 80s, it's basically just newspaper with a slightly thicker cover.
Yes.
But then Image came in and they started doing, you know, for, you know, I'm not just even talking about their like kind of gimmicky covers with the foil or whatever, but just it's higher quality cardstock to make the art look better. And I really think Marvel especially picked up on that towards the end of the decade with Marvel Knights and started implementing that. And I feel like there's a lot of great comic book quality now that is attributed to the time because of the comics being sold on the back of their art.
Yeah. And you're giving a lot of praise to Kingdom Come. Would that be your favorite story out of coming out from the 90s?
Oh man. If I were kind of looking at the stories objectively,
mm-hmm. and
took my fanboy, you know, biases out of it, I would say so. I do like Kingdom Come a little bit more than Marvel's, but those are definitely, I think, the highest quality. I mean, there are other things from the 90s, like Pedro and Me and some more creator-owned stuff that are right up there. But if I was going to say my favorite, I really, really am a sucker for the Kevin Smith Daredevil run in 1998 with Joe Quesada. That really kind of relaunched Marvel as a whole, because Daredevil is my favorite character. But if I'm looking at it as an objective observer, I would definitely say Kingdom Come is the best of the books to come out of that decade.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm trying to think of one for me that came out in the 90s. I liked Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
I really liked that. I really liked that. How it just grabbed, like, granted in the movie, the snap was just the end. It was like within the first issue, and like I think within like a couple of issues, he snaps his fingers and boom, half of the universe is gone.
Right.
It was such a humongous impact, because you got, I mean, you had so many other characters like that was gone that you didn't think they were going to just erase out just like that. It was some few memorable characters that just disappeared without a trace. And it was definitely a huge impact. And it also was end up making Thanos one of my favorite villains as well. Or just most intriguing one as well. To where this guy is literally obsessed with death. Like,
that is so true. And I wish they would have kind of went away from that in the movies. You know, they gave him, tried to give him a more human kind of motivation. But I really liked he's just kind of crazy and he wants to impress death. I think that is just such it's a very comic booky, you know, it's very kind of over the top 1990s comic book idea that he just loves death.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that's, and it wouldn't translate super well to the big screen, I don't think, but I do like that interpretation more. I think that's more fun. It makes for a more fun villain. I definitely like Thanos in the comics more than the movies.
Yeah. I mean, not to say there's nothing wrong with what we got, but yeah, I was definitely looking forward to seeing the Thanos in the comic books. It could be in the books, I mean, in the movie as well. Because even after that end credit scene after Avengers, when he says it's, you know, to challenge them, you need to court death. You're thinking, oh.
I get chills still thinking about that.
Yeah.
That's a mind-blowing experience.
Yeah, yeah, and it's and just to delve into a little bit about comic books now, but there was a book, Thanos Rising, that basically gives you his background, his whole origin story of how Thanos became Thanos, and it just makes him even more intriguing, and learning that he's always been crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just now coming into it. He's definitely like in my top five for sure.
Yeah, I definitely find that interpretation more intriguing than what we got in the movies. Not even, like you said, not that the movies are bad. I prefer the comics to the movies, just like I do with a lot of things that happen.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Let's go ahead and delve into comic books now, to where we're seeing a bit of a transition to where the artist was like the rock stars in the 90s. Now it seems to be the writers
yeah.
who to be more influential.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at, 2000, coming off of Marvel's bankruptcy, Joe Quesada, is named editor-in-chief, and his first two things, he's like, I'm going to hire Brian Michael Bendis, I'm going to hire Mark Millar, and I'm going to give them the reins. And then, you see another wave of Ed Brubaker, Grant Morrison, J. Michael Straczynski coming on books, Captain America and New X-Men and Amazing Spider-Man. And it really did become a very much a writer-driven company and then eventually industry. Yeah, I think Marvel really led the way on that.
Totally, totally. Even though, I mean, granted, it was like a transition, but at the same time, artists kind of blended in with the artists as well. I mean, because you started seeing a more broader style mm-hmm. of art.
I mean, now you go in a comic book store, we're talking 20 years removed from kind of the turn, and now there is every kind of art on the bookshelves. I mean, there are people who look completely different from what was really, the 90s was, a lot of big muscles, like we talked about, all the extreme, but now you've got black and white artists. You've got people like Chris Samney, who I love, who really work with shadow really well, and Frank Quitely with his ultra detail, and just a lot of different. You could go and you could find an artist for every taste nowadays.
Without a doubt, and it's interesting because some of these artists now probably wouldn't be able to find a job back in the 90s. A lot of things you see now probably wouldn't have flown at all in the 90s.
No. My favorite comic book artist, I mean, if I'm just talking objectively, is Darwin Cook. I think, he going back to the 90s, I think he's the best cartoonist that we've had in the last 30 years. He's my favorite, but he couldn't get work in the 90s. His work was kind of considered too cartoony, kind of looks kind of similar to Bruce Timm style, so he actually got a job animating on Batman Beyond. That was how he kind of broke into the industry, and then, he eventually moved to comics with the New Frontier, which I kind of think really put him on the map, and then the Parker novels, and I before Watchmen, Minutemen, he's got such a great clean line that just was so not popular at the time that he couldn't even get work.
It's crazy thinking that way, that such a profound artist just got looked over back then in the 90s, man. It's hard to believe that. But it brought out more broader style of artists, and it brought out one of my favorite artists, and that's Humberto Ramos. I love his art. It's different. It's almost edgy in this instance, and I don't think
it's very expressive.
Yes.
Very expressionistic. It's not photorealistic, or, if you look at a lot of comic books in the 90s, it's very like, they're big and muscular, but it's very much trying to draw people how, those Adonis type people would look. And his figures are very expressive, expressionistic, and that just wasn't popular at the time. And mm-mm. It's great that he came along at a time when his art could be appreciated.
Yes. Yeah, he definitely came in at the right time. And comic books now have become very influential into the media. It's we're seeing, especially in the MCU, all the movies are based off stories that happened recent.
Yeah. I mean, what was the turnaround between, the Age of Ultron storyline and, the Ultron Avengers movie? It was 2 years, Civil War, Captain America Civil War, that was 10 years removed from the story. It's very much they're focusing on the new stories.
Without a doubt. Iron Man 3 was a extremist.
Yeah.
Extremist. I mean, I think the oldest story that there was Infinity War. That was dating
Yeah.
back in the 90s. But
And really, when you think about it, it's older. It's the oldest one, but it's not even in the grand scheme of comics. It's a fairly recent story comparatively to some of the, going back to the 50s and 60s.
Totally, absolutely. It's I think I only I think Spider-Man, Black Panther were the only two movies that kind of didn't really necessarily deal with anything recent. But
Right.
I haven't. I
You
mean, I
can't
haven't.
really point to.
I really can't really point anything that was like super recent with these movies with the storylines. I mean, I may have caught a few Easter eggs of comic books of old, but nothing like, yeah, nothing really recent. Like, come to
Right,
knowledge.
especially compared to just about everything else, Thor Ragnarok, Winter Soldier. These are all 20th century stories.
And it's because, yeah, definitely. Because it seems that they were kind of, with Thor, definitely, they were kind of going parallel to what Thor was going through in the comic books, in recent books. Yeah. Because if you look at him now, he's short hair with a beard. In the book, in the comic books, short hair with the beard as well. I think the only thing,
Right.
and it kind of played with the unworthy story a little bit. It, but he, but the only thing that is, he hasn't lost his arm yet.
No.
That's the only thing that's
And
different.
who knows? Maybe we'll be seeing that in the next, next weekend.
It's possible. That's very possible. But what is your favorite story in comic books and comic books within this decade, within the 2000s?
Oh, man. I really liked man, I don't know. It's hard to say. There's been
There's
such
a
a
lot.
great outpouring of quality the last, 10, 15 years. I would say I'm going to give you two. One is All-Star Superman. I think that is the quintessential Superman story. Perfect writing, perfect art. I think that's about as close to a perfect comic book as you get. And then The Astonishing X-Men by Joss Whedon and Jon Cassaday, I think, is just a really, really great team dynamic, action-oriented but still really character-driven stuff that, made the first Avengers movie so great. Before he got there, he brought that to the X-Men when they desperately needed it. And I adore that book.
All right then. Now those are definitely probably arguable about which one could be the best one there, but definitely for sure those are definitely good stories. I would have to say Civil War, Mark Miller's Civil War, and to be more, the most recent one, Original Sin. Jason is Original
Oh,
Sin.
that is so underrated. I really loved Original Sin, and I feel like it kind of came and went, and it doesn't have the, like, Civil War is a seminal story at this point, and as it should be. But I feel like Original Sin came and went, and people don't talk about it quite as fondly, but I thought that was a great event.
And it definitely it shook things up in the Marvel Universe, and learning certain truths about some of the superheroes in Marvel Comics, it was crazy. And I think when you brought that whole secret about Thor being unworthy, they drug that thing out even after the event was over with, to make you wonder what was it that made him unworthy.
Right.
And just learning just certain other things about certain characters. It was just definitely an underrated story. And I don't think people really, I guess the impact of it didn't really hit people like as it should. But for me, it did. And reading some of the tie-ins along with the event, it's definitely one of my favorites of the 2000s.
Well, kind of piggybacking off of the you know, talking about the MCU and how they're adapting stories, I feel like, you know, comic books nowadays are taking, you know, a lot from the movies and putting them in the comics. You know, a lot of the looks of the characters are based on the looks in the movies, and a lot of characterization.
They are
based off of, like, you know, you love Civil War, and in that, you know, they said they were going to set up where it's, you know, Cap versus Iron Man, it's even, but it's clearly written to make Iron Man look like a jackass.
But then, pretty much.
You know, and that ended in early 2007, and a year later, Iron Man is the most popular superhero on the planet. Iron Man movie and Robert Downey Jr. and his charisma made him so extremely popular that now you read an Iron Man book, he is written as Robert Downey Jr. with that voice in mind.
Yes.
Exclusively.
Yes.
So you really see, especially on Marvel's side, I feel like Marvel, much more than DC, is really letting the movies influence the comics.
Yeah, I think they feel like, and I think it is true, I think they feel like their movies have become more popular than the books.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I mean, it's hard to argue. I mean, you know, a good selling comic sells, you know, 50,000-60,000 copies,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that many people, you know, will go see the Avengers movie on, you know, the third or fourth weekend, you know, 1 hour time slot. Like, those movies are sold to so many more people than will ever read the comics. So, I mean, I understand how Disney wants to kind of go steer more into what the movies are doing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, look at it. I mean, Captain Marvel made $1 billion.
Right.
$1 billion. It made up more money than the actual book has, probably within its entire history of, you know, being in on the shelves.
Easily. I mean, look, okay, so that's $1 billion. And that's not even one of the highest grossing ones. That's kind of like, you know, Marvel movies are kind of expected to do that nowadays.
Yeah.
And if you go back to X-Men number one, you know, the highest selling comic of all time, that'll never be topped. 8 million copies at, I don't know, $1, $1.50 each. That's, you know, somewhere between $10 and $15 million just on that one comic.
That one.
Compared to a billion, that is, you know, so minuscule.
Yeah. it's clear to say that, the MCU is right now the front runner in the Marvel business right now. And why not use that to, you know, mold, I guess you could say, to the Marvel Comics to, you know, draw more of a fan base as well with the comic, right, with their comic books.
No, they're really trying to, and I don't know if it's working. You know, I know a lot of people who go see these movies. I don't know hardly anyone who's reading the comics, and I don't think I've ever, you know, I'm sure they're out there, but I haven't really met a ton of people who saw the movies and then go read the comics, you know, the way we kind of got into it.
Yeah,
but
right.
They're really trying to gear the comics that are being sold to people who are walking into comic book shops for the first time, are looking at newsstands for the first time, and picking up a lot of comics. And I feel like one change that's definitely come from over the last 10 years that's come with these movies is comic books are moving away from the serialization model. You know, they're moving away from, you know, right now I just read, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 18, not Amazing Spider-Man, you know, 818, because they're always renumbering. They want, you know, people to, they want every story to be able to be people's first story. So a lot of these long running brands and titles are getting rebranded and repackaged for, you know, an audience that I'm not sure is there, but that's what they're trying to make possible.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think they're trying, yeah, and it's basically trying to keep away from that that run-on sentence type feel with these books. Right. I mean, granted, they have Marvel Legacy, where they're doing is keeping, of course, the, okay, this may be issue 18, but, you know, this is also issue 893 or whatever.
Right.
Just, you know, yeah, it's part of that continuity, but you can choose to put this in the continuity, you know, that is your continuity, whether you like it or not. Yeah.
You know, I understand why they're doing it. It's probably a smart business move, but it takes away kind of the charm of a lot of this stuff for me, because I, you know, I really enjoyed it. Something I really loved about comics. Okay. I remember reading my first, you know, I read Ultimate Spider-Man, so I had a baseline, but my first Amazing Spider-Man was the J. Michael Straczynski, John Romita Jr. run from like the early 2000s. Mm. And I remember opening up the first book and being thrown into the story and really having the feeling that these are characters who had been around for 30, 40 years. They're going to be around 30, 40 years, you know, after I'm already dead. Like, I'm getting like a snippet of this really long ongoing saga. And I really loved, you know, using context clues to figure out who everyone is and what's going on. And I feel like that's just a special thing in comics that's kind of been, that's fallen by the wayside lately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. I don't think people really put a real appreciation to that, as you know, because Amazing Spider-Man, was it Dan Slott? No, it wasn't Dan Slott. It was Dan Slott written Spider-Man for a long time.
Oh, he went like 150 issues or something crazy.
Yeah.
But you'd never know, because they just kept, you know, I think he started in like 650, in that range,
mm-hmm.
Wrote it to 700, then it became Superior Spider-Man, then there were two different Amazing Spider-Man number ones, like two whole volumes, and then he finished at like 801. So yeah, he had 150 issues, but it was broken up. It's not the special run it used to be, when you say, okay, Chris Claremont, he wrote, you know, from X-Men 94 to Uncanny X-Men, well, I don't know, I think it's like around 300, but it was like an unbroken run, and I really think that's just a special quality that comics have that isn't appreciated really anymore. Is the, you feel like when you're reading a comic, it's part of a grand tapestry instead of just an individual story.
Right, but you know, to go on to that, it's really based on the writer, well, the creative team, what they really want to do with that character.
Mm-hmm.
A good example for like DC, of course, is the most recent and one of the longest runs was Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Batman.
Yes.
Which was
legendary.
Yeah, legendary. It was really good. Like, I've read a few Batman books, but when I had to think about Batman, those two I think of right off bat. And they came up with so many good stories, but eventually you could tell that they were, I guess you could say, running out of ideas when they got to, because what was their last story? Was it Endgame, their last story?
They had Endgame, and then I think
there was another
one. The sequence, because, yeah, then they did the thing where Jim Gordon was Batman for a while in that, like, mech suit.
Yeah.
I think that was after Endgame, and that's kind of where I tailed off, because you're right, it kind of felt like their Batman story was done, but they were just kind of, you know, still going
along,
because that's, you know, what pays the bills.
Yeah, it didn't seem like they were on full sprint anymore. It seemed like they were just kind of pacing themselves at this point, and
no, they came out on the New 52. They shot out of the barrel like a bullet with the Court of Owls. I think that is...
Yes,
you know,
yes.
You're making a list of the 10... You know, you have a bookshelf and you want 10 Batman stories to put on it. That has absolutely cemented itself as one of them.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm kind of looking forward to their Black Label book they got coming out.
Yeah, I like that DC's doing Black Label. Well, now you're right, I am. With Last Night on Earth, I just saw he posted something about it on Instagram. Scott did.
Yes.
It's coming on sale next month. I'm really pumped for that one.
It is next month. Awesome.
Yeah, it's like May 29th. I think it's the end of the month.
Awesome. That, 'cause I mean, Grant, I saw like a couple of panels he posted. I mean, there was nothing, no captions were put into it or nothing, but it just looked. Of course, Greg Capullo's art is fantastic. I mean, he can draw the hell out of Batman.
He absolutely can, and he's another one that, I know he wrote Spawn for a long time, but he doesn't look like the people in the 90s. He kind of has, he can do the big superhero thing, but he also has really expressive faces, and really he has a basic cartooning style down, but it makes him such a good sequential storyteller. I think Greg Capullo is one of the absolute masters working in modern comics right now.
Oh yeah, totally, totally. I forgot to mention this, but your, I guess you could say it in comic books now, I guess, who you think is like doing best at art and writing right now?
Right now, today, as we sit in 2019,
Mm-hmm.
it's, oh boy. I really think if I'm picking someone that I just love, if I want a really good superhero comic right now, I think Jason Aaron across the board is one of the best. Scott Snyder's another one, but for my money, I think Jason Aaron just does old. He's kind of like a throwback to, like, his Thor book. I know it was a couple years ago now, he's still going, but that, where he was doing the three separate Thors, and that
Yes.
he kind of got Thor back to the epic style, and talking with Thor speak and everything. And then, so I would say him, Scott Snyder's up there. I actually got up to look at my bookshelf right now, like what I find really good. Unfortunately, since Darwin passed, if I'm gonna pick an artist right now. Oh, another writer I really like is Mark Russell. I thought his Flintstones book was really kind of subversive and really good. He was just doing some different stuff that I really like.
Yeah.
But if I'm picking an artist right now, Lee Weeks on Batman. Lee Weeks on Batman is fantastic. I really like Criminals back. So I'm getting Sean Phillips again. I think Sean Phillips tells great crime stories. And just looking at that, those are two completely different people with completely different styles. But
Oh
that is
yeah.
the landscape of comic
Oh yeah.
now, is you can have a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Fiona Staples on Saga is doing great things.
Yeah.
But Greg Capullo is definitely in that conversation too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. I had to agree with you on Jason Aaron's for sure. I think to me he almost kind of snuck up on, not well I guess not necessarily me, but I think far as everyone who reads comic books, I think he snuck up on everyone because how good he's been doing, especially with starting off with him on Thor and doing the God Bomb arc. That
No,
was
that.
that was a very, very riveting. I was hooked from the first issue on then. I don't even like his Avengers book.
See, I haven't picked that up yet. I've been meaning to, but I'm just now getting back into monthlies out of be out of, after being out of it for about a year. So I'm trying to get back into these books, and that's definitely one I want to check out because he definitely has that voice, and he's so versatile too, because he really broke in with his, the Vertigo series Scalped, which is a super, super dark, super, super gritty, hard crime tale. And it couldn't be more different than Thor, or probably his Avengers book, I'm guessing. Or, another X-Men book I really liked a few years ago is Wolverine and the X-Men, where he's just telling lighthearted X-Men stories. He can do
He can change it up in any way he
incredibly
wants.
talented writer, yeah. He really can.
He definitely brings, because it goes on back when I was saying where they're bringing the style of the movies into the comic books. He mastered that quite well, because you get to see, if you're reading Jason Aaron's Avengers, like the first arc, you're basically like basically reading the Avengers of the MCU in the book. It has that atmosphere when you're reading that book.
He just gets character.
He does. He really
to boil these people down. He reminds me, you know, he's kind of fallen off, but back 10 years ago, I would have said the same thing for DC about Geoff Johns. He's kind of Marvel's Geoff Johns. He really understands the base of these characters and can really make them play off each other in interesting ways.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I would say he is doing quite well right now. Say art right now for me, it would be Capullo, but he's not doing anything ongoing right now, is he?
Yeah, no, that's why I was kind of like, there's a lot of people I like. I could give you a ton of names, but like Paulo Rivera is one of my favorite artists, but he's not doing anything currently. Jock is another one of my favorites. He's not doing anything that I know of right now. But if you're going off people who are doing monthly books, I think, you know, at least the excitement level for Capullo coming back and doing another Batman book, and supposedly his last Batman book, has got, you know, he's so talented. My excitement level is off the charts.
Oh yeah, totally. I would say even this is, I mean, it's more, this one I'll bring up, it's more of a group effort than it is actual just one writer, but Jim Zub, Zdarsky, Mark Wade as well, they've done a Avengers book, No Surrender, and they are now doing the sequel to that, No Road Home, which is, to me, I think one of the most fun Avengers story I've read in quite a while. Especially No Surrender. I mean, granted, you're not getting, and it doesn't even use like the central core members a lot in the book. You're using basically like it was Scarlet Witch, at one point the Hulk, but you had like Hercules, the Wasp, not Hope, but her daughter, not Janet, but her daughter, basically. Who else was it in No Surrender? But it was a lot of like second to third generation Avengers.
Was it Miles in that book too?
I believe he was.
I mean, I haven't read it. I just, you know, I remember kind of following it in the news and everything. But I need to pick it up because I'll follow Mark Wade to the ends of the earth. I think Mark Wade can do no wrong.
Yeah, because I believe he was...
He's another one. He's kind of in that Jason Aaron mold, too, where he just gets character really well and kind of...
I think he's currently writing Immortal Hulk, if I'm not mistaken.
That's another one, man. That's another one I've been meaning to pick up.
It is really good. I mean, I stopped at issue 12, but it hasn't lost a step yet. Has not lost a step yet, but it is definitely riveting, and to see a Hulk that is basically that is unhinged and basically doesn't have a short leash that Banner usually has on him. He has no leash and he has nothing to really can hold him back. And I think that's an awesome way to tell a Hulk story.
Right, without the restraint that makes him not as scary.
Right. There is a lot in today, a lot of good art, good stories, and good art as well. I think it's an equal balance now.
Yeah, no, you're right. It kind of feels like, you know, for a while there, it was kind of like, you know, the writers were writing the book and they would just throw artists on them. But now... it really does feel more collaborative than ever where, you know, a good writer, I think, will always play to his artist's strengths. You know, not every artist is great at character work. Not every artist is, you know, an A-plus at, you know, great fight scenes. But a great writer will find himself an artist and they'll work, you know, in symbiosis, you know, kind of, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, and I know we keep going back to it, was just such a great example of two people at the top of their game who are completely in sync with one another.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that, because it's the same. I feel like it's the same way with Aarons and Donovan. Once they paired up together, they meld perfectly together.
Yeah. And Aaron is another one that can write to his artist, because then, you know, go back to Esad Ribic, who is incredible, but very particular. Like, it's a very specific style. And, you know, Jason told a, you know, a grand space opera fantasy story that is just basically like a, it looked like a rock album, you know, every page. And, you know, he knew to write to that strength. So that's just, again, kind of praising Jason Aaron for being able to pair with his artist so well. You know,
oh, yeah.
You can go and do Russell, like you said, Russell Dowderman, which is a much, much different style, and I feel like he tweaked his writing for that too.
Yeah, without a doubt. And going back to Ribic, that's another like Renaissance type artist right there as well. That his stuff is definitely something you would see in a museum as well.
Right, or spray painted on the side of a van.
Right, right.
Some metalhead's van.
yeah.
It's so epic. He, you know, no one quite does scale as well as him.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't think right now he's not doing any like any ongoings, but he is doing covers for Fantastic Four, and they are good, without a doubt.
No, I don't doubt it. That guy is, and he's a huge man. He is just a big hulking, and I don't know where he's from. He's from somewhere in Europe. Just this great big giant, super nice guy, and he draws so delicately.
It's funny how that works, right?
Strange. Right. No, he draws so much detail and delicately, but he's this big, you know, 6'5", huge human being who can just, you know, he holds a pencil in his huge hand and can just draw really small details so well.
Oh, man. If you compare, which decade do you think it's, I guess you would say, better than the other? Or would you say that there's been major improvements or disadvantages or anything like that?
No, I think, you know, compared to the 90s, we have come so far. And, you know, it's kind of weird to think about, but the numbers have gone down. There are far less comics sold now than there were in the 90s because of that speculator boom, but comics now are just so much, such a higher quality. The writing is 10 times better. The art, you know, I won't even say the art is better, because like I said, I think art is, you know, in the eye of the beholder, but there's just something for everyone now. Like, you know, I'm not a big fan of Rob Liefeld. You know, he's super popular in the 90s. He's got a book now. I think it's cool that, you know, Rob Liefeld is still doing books. You know, you could still get what you got in the 90s, but there's just such a broader variety that you can get nowadays that I really think is, and not everything's improved. Like I said, I wish I was reading, you know, I don't know what Avengers is on now, but I wish I was reading Avengers 700 instead of Avengers 18 or whatever it is. You know, that is one thing, but, you know, not everything's gotten better, but the overall quality across the board, I really think has just gone up. You know, we're in a real golden age right now, and I think we have been for, I don't know, about 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely say it's definitely, there's been major improvements in the industry now. And I don't think we could have the comic books that we have now if we had not gone through what we had in the comic books in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree 100%.
Yeah, it's because like I said, going back to what I was saying, it was a lot of good things did come out of the 90s, as far as, I mean, like a lot of good stories and a lot of good characters that have been turned into basically like pillars for both DC and Marvel.
Right.
Yeah.
No, and if, you know, not to go on too big of a tangent, but I think the other big contribution that the 90s as a decade gave us, you know, was Image Comics and the rise of creator-owned comics. And now,
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of indie books now.
And now, I think it's, you know, there are a lot more people incentivized to write comics because, and I really think the big game changer was The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Robert Kirkman is, he's set for life, his kids are set for his life, and his grandkids are set for life with the money he's made. And
Yeah.
that's awesome. You know, I'm so glad that a small indie book that, you know, was just kind of an image low print run in the early 2000s is now a multi, you know, probably a billion-dollar franchise. The Walking Dead is huge, and I don't, you
Yeah.
know, it's not for me, but there are a lot of fans of that.
Oh,
And I really
yes.
think the lasting impact of the 90s is the rise of these small, you know, image and other indie books. Like, that's where a lot of these writers have got their start. And now, you know, Brian Michael Bendis got his start, you know, writing crime graphic novels and before going to Marvel. And now there are a lot of people migrating from Marvel. And if you just look everywhere on all the streaming devices, everything is based on comics, like the Umbrella Academy. You know, Deadly
Yeah.
Class on Sci-Fi. I just saw that Garth
Yes.
Ennis posted The Boys. You know, I think that's coming to Amazon. Just posted that trailer today. You
Yep.
know, I think that is, if I could point to one thing from the 90s that has really stuck around and changed the industry for the better, it is the rise of these creator-owned comics.
Yes, and it's definitely made a boom in recent years with other indie books, where you have now Aftershock, also Source Press Print, Source Point Press,
Fantagraphics,
Phantom Bricks,
IDW.
IDW, a Boom.
Oni Press. I mean, yeah, it's not dominated by Marvel and DC the way it was, basically up until 1990. There were other publishers before, but nothing of substance. Now, you know, I'm looking at my bookshelf, but it's, you know, Oni Press, Pantheon. There's just so many people out there pushing great comics, and you know, all you have to do is look. You can find great comics anywhere of any kind. If you love fantasy stories, there
Yeah.
are great comics. There are great sci-fi comics. There are great
Yes.
super. There are comics great.
Comic books now have like become more than just capes and cowls. Now it's you have like a comic books now have become like a genre. There's a genre in comic books now. Whether do you like superheroes? Do you like mystery? Do you like horror?
Yeah, there's everything. You
Yeah,
know,
there's
there's slice of
anything.
life. There's just like, you know, some people write, you know, I think that's kind of a thing that's growing now is the like bio comic, you know, people telling just kind of their life through comics because you don't have to have a. The great thing about comics is there's no budget. You know, it takes, you know, it's going to cost Marvel $250 million to make Avengers Endgame. And it'll make it back, but that's a lot of money to sink into a project. If I'm a guy with a pencil and some ink, I could create, you know, anything I want on the page for, you know, the cost of my time, which I think is what makes comics special, is anything you can dream up, any story you can tell, you can put into comic form.
Yeah, totally. That's the simple beauty of about comic books right there. Is as complicated it may look, it's very simple to make a comic book. As far as like just making the good story, and just finding a good art, and it's just, yeah, it's really, I want to say just it's not as complicated as most
Right.
people would think it would be.
And I won't say it's easy. You know, I'm sure
Yeah.
the amount of talent that goes into this. You know, I couldn't dream of being able to draw like some of these artists, or you know, being able to write stories like some of these writers. But the barrier to entry is nothing. You have to have a pencil and paper. That's all you need to do to create great comics. And I think
That's
that
right.
is, there's some real poetic beauty in that.
Yeah, as long as you have a imagination, you can. There's no telling what may come out of it.
Right.
There's no limit to
Right.
that. Well, Ryan, that is all I have for you, buddy.
Yeah, I think we kind of exhausted
Yeah,
all the talking points on that one.
Yeah, I think we ran this one dry for sure. but it's been an honor to have you on the show. You have any future projects you got coming up, man?
No, I really just enjoy doing my Instagram page. I don't really have a lot of ambition outside of that right now. You know, I'm kind of toying with the idea of starting a YouTube channel, but that's quite a ways down the road. So you can follow me at Combo Classics on Instagram. You know, that's just where a couple times a week I'll post my thoughts on an individual issue. And, you know, if you're interested in learning more about the industry, more about writers, creators, come give me a follow.
All right. You heard a guy. All right. Ryan, it has been fun, and I'm hoping to have you on future episodes.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'd love to come back if the people will have me.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they will. I know I will. So it's been great, man. And guys, it's been fun. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and catch you next week. Peace.